sweet dreams for me. Dream sweet dreams for you.
For 91.5 FM, it is The Big Picture. Derek, Gary, and Lisa Nichols with you until 9 o'clock tonight. 617-627-3800 is the telephone number. 617-627-3800. Call that number. Be a part of the show. Coming up later tonight, United Healthcare has bailed on the Obamacare exchanges. We'll get to the bottom of that and try and figure out why that's going on, because that was supposed to be a great thing for the insurance industry.
If you like your plan, you can keep it. Apparently, that isn't a thing anymore. So we'll see what that's all about. I have a feeling, though, United Health is just the first of many, many that are going to back up. And we have that in so much more. That's a thing that happened. The craziest news story. What's hot. And everything from today's news. We have local, national, world sports, all that good stuff. And Derek will be telling us about how wonderfully warm the next few days are going to be. Again, I'm Lisa Nichols, and Derek Gary, we are here with you every Wednesday night, 7 to 9 o'clock p.m. And we're already getting phone calls in the beginning. Do they know we just started the show? They're so interested.
I know. No one's
in.
We haven't even
healthcare.
Said anything
we
yet.
We just say healthcare and people start calling.
Oh my God, it's unbelievable. Well, because everybody's angry. that's America in 2016.
I think our callers probably have higher premiums than we do.
Everybody's angry, and that's why they're voting for Donald Trump. So yes. There you go.
That's another thing we will be discussing.
Welcome to Barack Obama's America.
What happened in New York yesterday?
Yeah. So lots to get to tonight. Let's start it out the way that we always do with all of the fun things happening in the news. If I, man. Every week I come in and it's something different with this board.
Of course.
I need a producer. If you would like to produce a weekly radio show for free, 617-627-3800.
Can we
please
get an intern or something?
Come in. I will let you produce the show.
Well, in local news, we learned a major Boston financial company is stealing your finances. Secretary of State William F. Galvin filed a civil complaint Wednesday against State Street Corporation for overcharging customers more than $200 million. Again, that's $200 million. This is over 18 years, a problem the Boston Financial Services giant has recently identified and disclosed. According to the complaint, the company's State Street Global Markets unit commonly inflated administrative costs for pension funds, mutual funds, hedge funds, and other clients of custodial banking services. In one example, Galvin said State Street charged clients for, quote, secure electronic messages, marking them to $5 per message when the true cost was 25 cents. State Street allegedly assured clients that it was merely passing along the actual cost of such services.
So wait a minute. We're talking about $200 million over 20 years.
Mm-hmm. So what happens
So that's 11 million bucks a year is basically what we're talking about, right?
Clients are losing.
Yeah.
And State Street is gaining.
How many clients?
They haven't revealed the numbers.
I mean, if we're talking about a million clients, that's like, I don't know if they have a million clients or not, but that's not like, that's $11 a head.
That's not the point. That a company that you hire to take care of your financial services is taking money from you.
Yeah, but you hired...
No, but it is. But it doesn't matter if it's one person that it's taking from or a million people.
Well,
the fact you have a company that has overcharged people $200 million.
Over 18 years. It's not...
But here's the thing. It's not like they found this out. They're making it seem like, oh, just back in November. Apparently, State Street in November or December had said it discovered these overcharges. There are emails from multiple people that work with the company saying, I don't know how we're getting away with this. Clients are going to start noticing this. So maybe you only get 11 cents overcharged, whereas some people are getting thousands of dollars overcharged.
Well, that's... But that's where I raise the question on this, because the first number that you hear is $200 million, and immediately you're like, those Wall Street scumbags are doing this again. Then you find out it's over 20 years, and then it's...
$200 million.
Over 20 years.
18 years, but what if 1 year it's not as much? The fact that they are taking money from you is the basis of the story, and that's what is important.
But now, I want to know why they're taking money from
you. You have evidence... Let's look at internal emails coming from employees. One employee wrote, why the company was marking up those charges, quote, is beyond me. Same employee later said in an email, I'm telling you, I learn something new every day. Simply not amazed at anything that goes on here anymore. Clearly, there's a problem with corporate culture there.
Yeah. Okay.
You have employees that are raising flags. It's not like this just happened, as they're making it seem. Began in December.
Right.
We're talking about having emails where they're noticing their own clients are being docked money in 2008, 2009. We're now in 2015. This first started, what was it? 2004.
Well, if it's 18 years ago, it's more than it's back in the 90s.
But they've been noticing emails that employees of State Street have noticed it.
Here's what, somebody screwed something up 18 years ago. Somebody set a computer program up the wrong way, and that's probably where this began.
So what you're telling me is 18 years ago, they didn't notice this?
Somebody...
Conveniently, Derek?
Well, somebody...
The company...
Somebody should have noticed this.
No, it was noticed. It was just covered up, and it was like, how long can we get away with this?
Right.
Now we start seeing numbers into the 200 millions. The company puts itself out and says, hey, we actually did something bad.
Which now
you have Galvin that's putting a civil suit. Personally, I feel that it should be a criminal suit. But the only way that the state is going to get money is if it's a civil suit.
If it's a criminal suit, there has to be evidence of criminal wrongdoing. Somebody screwing up accounting software or screwing up billing software is not evidence of criminal wrongdoing.
Now, what if we find out that they were covering this up?
If there
is going to be an investigation.
If they were covering it up... Here's the thing. Until you tell me how much each individual client was affected by this, it is difficult for me to say, yeah, those guys should be thrown in jail.
Will I change your mind if I tell you this exact same thing happened at the UK offices with State Street?
That just tells me that you had the same idiot setting things up in both places.
But I mean, there have been a series of regulatory issues in recent months, and it's ranging from pay cases in Ohio. I mean, this is corporate wrongdoing.
You
can't tell me, honestly, for 18 years.
There is a difference.
They didn't notice it.
There's a difference between corporate wrongdoing and corporate incompetence. And
corporate incompetence, we're talking about the largest financial service company in Boston, if not across the United States.
That doesn't mean they don't screw things up on a daily basis. Every company does. So you look at the $200 million and you're like, okay, that's a big number. What's going on with this? And you realize that it's spread out over 18 years. We're talking about, what did I say? Like $18 million a year or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be 10, 11. It'd be about $11 million a year. That's nickels and dimes to a company this size. It's nickels and dimes. There is nothing here that you've told me that makes me think that this is some sort of organized fraud on the part of State Street to bilk their customers. I think somebody screwed up, and rather than fix it and admit
then
it,
that's fine.
They swept it under the rug for 18 years.
If we want to talk about it being incompetence, the fact that you have it going on for 18 years is wrong.
Yeah.
When does it become, at what time frame does it then become criminal?
It never becomes criminal. It
no,
becomes...
because if you're letting it happen, you're letting it continue on. You know about it. You know that you're taking money from your clients and you don't do anything about it for 18 years. That's my problem. This isn't $200 million that, oops, it happened for 30 plus years. You maybe see a few nickels and dimes here and there. 20 years is a reasonable time frame.
Here's what you're going to find out downstream on this one. Is it's a problem that would
No, I don't want to hear the whole excuse that it is a computer glitch that takes out a few dollars.
Let me talk, because you're way off. What you're going to hear downstream is that it would have cost them $10 million to fix this, and nobody at the higher levels of the company would authorize the payment. That's what you're going to find out, is that somebody knew about it, and they said, we need to fix this. How much? $10 million bucks.
No, it's already proven that multiple people knew about it.
No, we don't have the $10 million in the budget. We're sorry. While they continue making profits year after year after year. We don't have the money in the budget.
How does that make it right?
It doesn't make it right. But it doesn't make it criminal either.
But I also can't justify, a few dollars here and there over the 18 years. I can't justify that. When it went on for so long.
It's a question of perception.
But that's gross incompetence.
It's a question of perception. You throw the $200 million out there and everybody's like, they're stealing from people. They're stealing from people. No, they're not.
They're overcharging.
Let me tell you something.
They knew they were overcharging. They overcharged. They continue with it. Please explain it to me in any other way.
If your great act of criminality at State Street is to steal $10 million a year, you are the worst criminal ever. You are the worst criminal that ever walked the earth. Think bigger than that.
Yeah, but because this way you can't get caught, clearly, for 18 years.
No, somebody screwed up.
So you're telling me if you were a client of State Street, you wouldn't be pissed off that maybe a couple $1,000 from your account is missing? Oh, no, you're shaking your head like,
can I tell you something? Over that time period, if I find out there's a couple of $1,000 missing, I might have paid that in fees anyway.
That's insane.
That's not going to bother me. That's not going to bother me. Am I going to expect, when they admit that they've done it, that they're going to refund that money to me? Yes, I am. Mm-hmm. And this is how State Street makes it right. Give all of your customers the $1,500 or $2,000 or whatever you owe them to even up the balance sheet, fix the problem that's causing the overbilling, and then give the Commonwealth of Massachusetts its pound of flesh. And let that be a warning to you that if you dealt with the problem in the first place, you wouldn't be given $50 million to the Commonwealth.
I just can't justify it for being so long.
And you're right.
They should have caught it.
And you're right, by the way, that the only reason the Commonwealth is pursuing a civil suit is because that lets them get the monies, which is really what they're all about.
Massachusetts likes the monies.
They want the monies. And they look at State Street and they're like, aha, you screwed up. It's
payday.
Like, there was the other story that came out today. That over the last 2 years, $435,000,
which I thought was very minimal. If we're talking in terms of this was the story
Mass
with
Health.
MassHealth was paying people that were on the restricted list.
Yes.
So whether that was pharmacists, that was physicians, they were giving money. And as Derek said, it was over a few year period, but we're only talking about $400,000,
right?
In reference to the pharmaceutical and medical business, $400,000 is nothing. I probably have medical bills up in that amount of money.
You found $435,000 of inappropriate payments out of $500 million over those 2 years. That's pretty good. You got it down to 1%. Every bit of credit in the world to Suzanne Bump, because
she does a great
as the state auditor. She is doing a great job. I look at this story, and she comes out and does a press conference, and she's like, we're going to stop this, and we're going to get the money back, and you don't mess with Suzanne Bump. She is going to get that. I guarantee you she'll get a lot of that money back. But
no, but I mean, the difference between, you know, these two stories, I look at that and say, yes, that is an insignificant amount of money.
That's a win.
But also, this is just, you know, going against the rules in sense of giving money to people that shouldn't get it. Whereas if we're looking at the State Street, this is something that they knew about, had knowledge of it, continued with it, and continued to take money out of the pockets of their clients. That, to me, Derek, is wrong.
It's wrong, but it is everyday corporate incompetence wrong. There's nothing criminal involved in this. This is just people failing to do their jobs. And if that was a crime, a lot of Americans would be in jail. If you thought we had too much prison population now, oh boy. National news. There were no major surprises in yesterday's New York primary. Donald Trump secured 89 of the available delegates with 60.5% of the Republican vote. The Ohio Governor John Kasich won Manhattan and claimed three delegates. Ted Cruz finished with just 14.4% of the vote and no delegates, in part due to his New York values criticism of frontrunner Trump earlier in the year. Hillary Clinton won by a comfortable 15% margin, claiming nearly 58% of the vote. Clinton claimed 139 of the available delegates, while Bernie Sanders claimed 106, complicating delegate math on the Democratic side.
The results weren't anything shocking.
We kind of saw this
one
coming.
We knew exactly. I mean, it really came down to what were going to be the percentages that each person was going to win by. We knew there was no possible way that Cruz could have any holding in New York. Kasich had a good... What was the percentage in Manhattan for Kasich? I thought that was a little surprising.
He came in, I forget what the exact number was, but it was around 70%.
Yeah.
You know, like Kasich won, man. I mean, this wasn't, he snuck it out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Cruz was always going to lose New York. As soon as he opened his mouth and said New York values, done, goodbye, you're finished. Shouldn't have even shown up. But Kasich winning Manhattan by that big of a margin
is kind of surprising. But I mean, for the majority, New York is incredibly liberal. And especially if we're talking, you know, in the area of Manhattan, if they are voting in the GOP, they're probably the most liberal of the conservatives.
By the way, that win...
Cruz has no chance.
That win bolsters John Kasich's argument that he should be the nominee. And as we move closer and closer to the contested convention,
which will happen,
John Kasich's decision to stay in this race and finish third if he has to, but keep polling as well as he has been nationally, is looking more and more like one of the gutsiest and smartest political decisions we've seen in decades.
Mm-hmm.
And
so are you taking a step back and changing your mind on his position of setting himself up as a VP candidate?
I think the strategy was always...
And using that selling point?
I think the strategy was always for him to make the argument that I should be the vice presidential candidate. I think Kasich would have been happy with that.
But could we say with him staying in...
What's happened in the last month... Because he won Ohio, and we figured he was going to win Ohio. That's a big state for the Republicans.
But he won Ohio, and that's it. Do you think he has a chance of next Tuesday winning Pennsylvania?
We'll see. Because there were questions about whether or not his Ohio win would translate in Indiana or Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
And those things have not happened. So, Pennsylvania, it's a possibility. The states are somewhat similar in their makeup.
The thing is, though, as much as people don't want Trump, and you hear all this is, you know, flowing around in media, it still blows my mind that we can go into a contested convention where Trump has so many more delegates and still can't get the nomination.
If he doesn't have the number of delegates needed to win, he can't get the nomination.
I understand.
Yeah, well,
we're also dealing with an RNC that is constantly changing the rules, making them up as they go.
We could talk about the shenanigans that are going on in places like Colorado and Wyoming,
mm-hmm.
where they're basically handing delegates to Ted Cruz to stop Donald Trump from getting the nomination. That's a bigger issue. But John Kasich, as I said a couple of months ago, my belief was that he was playing the long game. I will be the vice presidential nominee, and I'll wait my 8 years, and then I'll run for president.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's got all of the Washington credentials to be president.
No, and absolutely. I mean, I said that he had delusions of staying in and actually thinking that he could win, understanding that he was setting himself up for a position as VP. But, Derek, you make a really interesting argument because this could happen.
Yeah.
The RNC is in such a mess and debacle right now. We can go into, Detroit?
Yeah.
We can go into Detroit for the convention, and as we talked about, first ballot, nobody gets it, and the only two people that are eligible for it are Donald Trump and Ted Cruz because they won over 8 states. John Kasich only winning 1 cannot. We go into ballot 2. All bets are off.
Everything's on
anybody
the table.
And that's why we're hearing, you know, that floating around of Paul Ryan, possibly. He was on, I think, Jimmy Kimmel last night or Stephen Colbert, one of those.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's basically doing his press tour of saying how he's not going to be or accept the nomination if he gets it. I still don't believe him.
I don't believe him either, but I think it's his way of saying, don't give me the nomination.
Yeah.
Because there are... But John Kasich, very quietly, is emerging as a real alternative in this race. We know they don't like Trump. We know the establishment doesn't care for Cruz, but would take Cruz over Trump. Kasich's just sitting quietly in the corner. And he's not getting commanding victories all over the place, but I suspect he put some effort into trying to win Manhattan. And the fact that he won Manhattan is another sign to the Republican establishment that if you give me the torch, I will run with it all the way to 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. It's worth watching this because this...
Do you think the nail is in the coffin for Bernie Sanders?
No, because the delegate math will not allow Hillary Clinton, even if she wins out, to have enough delegates to get the nominee, the mm-hmm. nomination, without the superdelegates. And some of her superdelegates should not necessarily be her superdelegates. So if Bernie Sanders can put together a couple of wins, he's got to win Pennsylvania at this point. This is a little bit like the playoffs. Okay, you're down.
So what do we have next Tuesday?
Down,
we have Pennsylvania and...
Bernie Sanders is down by 3 in a 7-game series. He's got to win the next 3.
2004 Red Sox.
Just to get it back to the point where it becomes competitive again.
Mm-hmm.
California is still in play. That is a
That's
huge state.
Very, very, very tough for him to win.
It's not going to be that tough for him to win. Bernie Sanders could win California. Pennsylvania is in play. There are a lot of smaller states that are in play. And the Democrats could go into their convention without a clear leader. Because unless Hillary Clinton goes in there with a serious distance between her and Sanders, if we're talking about 100, 200 delegates and neither one of them has the nomination locked up, as much as the leadership of the Democratic Party is trying to anoint Hillary Clinton...
Oh, I feel like her name is already written on the ballot.
The weakness of Hillary Clinton in this primary season is a problem for the big donors and is a problem for the pragmatics who are not already beholden to the Hillary Clinton camp.
No, absolutely. And one can only hope that it's a repeat of 2008 with an epic crumble down the stretch.
The most interesting polling that came out in the past couple of weeks showed that Bernie Sanders would beat everybody. Bernie Sanders is the only guaranteed win candidate out of the 5 who are left.
No, and I have said it many, many times before. You have Trump and Hillary Clinton. In the final, Trump's going to beat her outright. If you have Bernie Sanders and Trump, which could be a possibility, then you have an election.
Maybe we could throw out this entire cumbersome primary process with all of its debates and all of its nonsense and just let the parties pick who the nominee is going to be. Would we lose anything other than the millions...
How undemocratic of you, Derek.
Other than the millions upon millions of dollars and hours of time that have been squandered in the interest of getting to a dead heat. Because usually at this point, somebody's walked away with the nomination by such a huge margin that nobody even cares what California does.
No, and that's what's so interesting about this election cycle is this is something that we've never seen before. It's completely different. There are no rules.
Well, it's something you have never seen before. Some of us are old enough to remember 1976. I don't remember it vividly, but there was that floor fight at the Republican convention in 76 between Ronald Reagan and Gerald Ford. And Gerald Ford ultimately won the nomination and ultimately lost the race for the White House. Should have gone with Reagan in 76. Not saying Jimmy Carter was a bad president. I'm just saying Republicans might have kept it going. In world news, up to 500 migrants may have drowned at sea last week on the dangerous journey from Libya to Italy, according to the United Nations. 41 survivors were rescued by a merchant ship after drifting at sea for 3 days. They told authorities that smugglers were attempting to move them to a larger ship when it capsized, killing nearly everyone on board. If the numbers stand, they would be equal to nearly two-thirds of the 737 migrants confirmed to have died at sea so far in 2016. And you're looking at a number that would be, I believe, if we add 500 to this, we're talking about the vicinity of the Titanic disaster, which is a context that everybody understands.
Mm-hmm. No, and I mean, this is something that's ongoing, that is going to continually happen. Whether it's, you know, from where they're coming from, Syria, over to Turkey, and then trying to get into the EU, people are dying.
There's an interesting dimension to this, which is the survivors left on a small boat. And there were about 100 or so people on this boat. And then they went out to the middle of the ocean, and they hooked up with a much larger boat that already had a few hundred people on it. So they're bringing these small boats in and throwing everybody on the big boat. We know that the Turkish and European officials are grabbing the boats and turning them around and seizing them.
Mm-hmm.
So this may be a new strategy on the part of the smugglers. They don't want to lose their boats because if you lose all the boats, you can't smuggle anymore. So if you take older, larger boats that you don't care as much about and throw the migrants on there, you can sacrifice the one big boat for the sake of keeping the smaller boats.
Now, it was interesting how you said they were headed to Italy. Is this probably in part where there is higher security going on right now in Greece, where a majority of these boats were originally going to, but because of the new deal that's going on with Turkey and sending people back, they're all lined up on the beach in Greece and having those boats turn around.
It doesn't matter where you go, the rules are the same.
Mm-hmm.
But word has probably gotten back to the migrants that you don't want to go to Greece.
No, absolutely. I'm sure it's easier in some areas than others. It's just like if people are coming over from Mexico, there's some areas on the Mexican border that are easy to penetrate into America.
It doesn't matter. Because whatever,
all the rules are the same. There's some ways that are easier to get into.
However you try and get in, you're going to get caught, and you're going to get sent back to Turkey.
Mm-hmm.
But if the migrants all know, don't go to Greece, and the smugglers say, we'll take you to Greece, the migrants say no.
You're going to essentially have more of an influx in Macedonia, Croatia,
right.
Italy.
So the smugglers say, we'll take you to Italy. The migrants don't know that they're going to be sent back from Italy, so they say, okay. The smugglers know. The smugglers don't care. They just want the $10,000 or $5,000 per head to get these people on these boats.
Mm-hmm.
It's WMFO Medford.
Today in sports, we learned yelling gay slurs will put you on thin ice. Blackhawks forward Andrew Shaw apologized Wednesday for yelling an anti-gay slur at refs on the ice after he was sent to the penalty box late in Chicago's Game 4 loss at home to the St. Louis Blues. Speaking for a few moments before the team left for St. Louis, Shaw said that he couldn't sleep on Tuesday night's game after watching the video of his outburst was difficult. It was video of the incident that went viral on social media, prompting sharp criticism and an NHL investigation. Quote, it was hard to see. Emotions got the best of me, Shaw said, adding that he understands why the slur is considered hurtful. Quote, I'll never use the word again, that's for sure. That's not the type of guy I am. Shaw was sent off for interference at 17 minutes and 56 seconds of the third period, hurting Chicago's chance of a comeback in what ended up being a 4-3 loss. While sitting in the box, Shaw pounded on the glass with his stick and yelled at somebody on the ice. As video of the incident spread online, the You Can Play Project swiftly tweeted that it was planning to contact the NHL. Now, the You Can Play Project is the LGBT group for athletes. What is interesting about this is, as far as we know so far, there has been no punishment given to him. He has not been suspended. He has not been fined. He has actually come out, as I said, and apologized for making such a slur. So there shouldn't be an investigation. He said it. He did it. The NHL in the past, I'm going to say 2 years, and especially this year, has really aligned themselves with the LGBT community. You cannot have, in my opinion, somebody that is not going to get fined, and should he be taken out of Game 5? Absolutely. You cannot align yourself with a certain organization if you're not going to follow through with that. Now, if you look back, if you remember, I think it was in 2011, Kobe Bryant was fined for $500,000. You had Joakim Noah. He was fined for $400,000 in the NBA for saying the exact same thing. Rajon Rondo, same thing.
I could see fining him, not suspending him. If you're going to suspend somebody during the playoffs...
It's not unprecedented, though.
I know it's not unprecedented, but...
But especially... And not that I'm going to give...
Well, it's unprecedented, I believe, in the NHL.
In the NHL, yes.
Now, here's the thing. If we're talking about... And I would say the same thing about the NBA. If you're talking about language or poor sportsmanship that does not result in physical injury to another player or a blatant rules violation,
mm-hmm.
such as hacking the goalie, knocking the goalpost, you know, out of the pins, deliberately checking somebody out of the game. If we're talking about something that is said in the heat of the moment, fine him and move on. Because with the NHL and the NBA, you have such a narrow depth of talent that taking that player out of the game can throw off the results of the playoffs.
No, but I mean, if you...
Did he do a stupid thing? Is it unforgivable?
Absolutely.
Well, I won't say it's
but
unforgivable.
The thing is,
did he
not
do a stupid thing?
There's a difference between saying that slur in week one of the season compared to the playoffs, but especially where there is so much spotlight put on the playoffs. We're talking about social media is all over this. Every single news channel is all
right
over this, because there is a much greater spotlight on a game four situation when it's tied up. Understanding that you can't have a league that is, it's the same thing why we knock the NFL for not having greater punishments for somebody that beats their wife. You can't align yourself to love women and have everybody wear pink helmets and pink cleats when somebody's beating their wife and they get suspended for a half a game.
The problem with the NFL is that the punishments aren't consistent.
Well, that's the thing.
That Roger Goodell pulls a number out of his head and says, yeah, one game.
No, but I mean,
enough.
When something like that happens, we're all over it. I mean, essentially,
right.
It's...
But as much as you said that the media volume is turned up on this, the pressure and emotions on these players is turned up as well.
Have you seen the video of this?
I haven't seen the video. I don't.
So, but it's not.
I don't
like,
need to see the video.
I mean, this carried on for a good couple minutes.
I'm
and
sure
the fact
it did.
That it was a fight after around the goal, and you know Shaw has his stick got caught up in somebody. He was basically, you know, all over him. But then he gave both middle fingers. It was like he was skating around the middle of the ice, giving both middle fingers to the refs, then going in the box, slamming with his stick on the, you know, glass, and then screaming the F word. Like,
So he called the...
So it's not like just a in-the-moment sort of thing, like, oops.
Right.
So we're talking about you're acting like a child.
He called the referees a bundle of sticks, is what you're saying. He referred to them several times as a bundle of sticks.
Multiple times, yes.
Players melt down in this situation. Did he physically hurt anybody? Was he attempting to physically hurt anybody?
No, but just
no.
To,
Did he come out and say...
At the minimum, there needs to be a fine.
I agree with you 100%. Fine the hell out of the guy. Take all of his... Take every penny that he will make in the playoffs away from him. But do not punish the rest of the team and the chances of that team to advance in the playoffs because somebody called somebody else a bad name. That's going a little too far.
I'm going to have to disagree in the sense of you represent your company. Derek, when you go out and you wear the shirt of your company and you go to a bar and start acting like an asshole and start screaming at the bartender and throwing bottles, picking fights, I know where you work. I can call up your work and say, who is this guy representing your company?
Those things are all part of my charm. That's why my company employs me. That's all just part of my charm.
They know what they're getting with you. No, but you have to understand. I mean, sometimes a team gets hurt because of one person's actions. It's just the way it is. Unfortunately, we're in a situation where we're talking about playoffs.
No, we're in a situation where you're saying that name calling is worthy of basically handcuffing a team's ability to win a playoff series. I don't agree with that. I don't agree with that at all.
There's a big difference in passing on the ice, calling another player DB, than stomping around on your skates in the middle of the ice, flipping the bird on my television, understanding where you are. There is a difference between a player, and I get it, you're in the moment, and you're pissed off, and you're angry, and thinks that that call was completely unjust. But there is a difference between that, making a mockery of the sport.
He doesn't understand where he is in that moment. He's just angry. And he didn't go start attacking the refs with his stick. He didn't throw things on the ice. Yes, he threw a tantrum like a baby. He called the referees a bundle of sticks several times. He flipped off everybody. Juvenile behavior. Over the top. And if I was the manager of that team or the coach of that team, I might sit him down for the next game because I don't want him going out there and being a loose cannon. But I want that decision. I don't want the league making that decision because somebody said a bad word. If we're going to have professional sports where the stakes are this high and emotions are this high.
And that is why 99% of all the hockey players conduct themselves in a much more professional manner.
Only as much as what we see out on the ice. As soon as they're off that ice, believe me, they're not conducting themselves in a professional manner. You've been in locker rooms.
Exactly.
You know what it's like back there.
You just said it. There's a difference between I get it.
As a performer,
you're not only an athlete, but you're a performer. All eyes are on you.
You're not a performer. You're an athlete. You're there to play a game. This is hockey we're talking about.
You are also a performer. You're an image.
You're not a performer.
You represent yourself. You represent your team. No, you represent the sport.
That's what's wrong with professional sports right now, is all this idea that these people have to be ambassadors and have to be the greatest people on the face of the planet. You know the history of sports. Go look at the classic baseball players. Look at the classic NHL players. Go look at the classic football players.
That is how you make money now, being an image.
In hockey, you make money by being a good player. Hockey may be the one sport that's left.
Derek, in any sport, having an image and being known for something.
Hockey is the one sport we have left where what you can do on the ice matters more than who you are as a human being. If you can be the total package, if you can be a Cam Neely, and you're not only great on the ice, but everybody in town loves you, that's a huge win. But this league also has room for people like Tyler Seguin. And Tyler Seguin is not a model human being by any stretch of the imagination.
But would I love for him to be back on the Bruins?
But part of the reason people love hockey is because it's the last true sport that hasn't been inundated by these showboating celebrities, because it is hard to set yourself that much higher than the players around you. It's a difficult game to play.
I mean, I will give you that to a point, but I don't agree completely on it.
We're not costing teams playoff games because someone said a bad word, even if he called the referee a bundle of sticks.
Well, Derek, if you didn't get enough of racial slurs, in food news we learned happy birthday isn't the only thing written on a cake. Whole Foods is fighting back against a lawsuit filed earlier this week by a pastor who accused a store worker of icing a homophobic slur on a cake. Jordan Brown, who is gay, alleged that the store in Austin, Texas, sold him a custom cake reading "Love Wins" expletive. But in a statement on Tuesday, Whole Foods called the claims fraudulent and it said to it intends to pursue legal action against Brown and his attorney, Austin Kaplan of Kaplan Law Firm, PLLC. Whole Foods added that the bakery staff member accused of writing the homophobic slur identifies herself as LGBTQ herself. Whole Foods wrote in a statement, quote, after reviewing the security footage of Mr. Brown, it's clear that the UPC label is in fact on the top of the box and not on the side of the package. This is evident as the cashier scans a UPC code on the top of the box. So this story is so incredibly interesting. How it is unraveling into a soap opera. It started as this pastor from Austin, Texas, goes into a Whole Foods and claims that he gets a cake. He bought this cake for one of the congregation members, going to surprise him with a cake. And as he intended for it to say, "Love Wins," it had something else written on it. Well, Whole Foods is now coming back and saying, wait a minute. We have footage where you told us that the code was on the side of the box, so it couldn't have been tampered with, where the code was actually on the top. So you could easily open the box and close the box without noticing any tampering.
The word in question is fag.
Yes.
And we are not so politically correct that we cannot put that out there, even though every newspaper in America has blurred it out and every website has blurred it out. The word in question is fag, in case you couldn't figure it out.
Now, if you look at any of the pictures from, you know, the evidence of it, some of them are in a box that is completely covered over, and then some is in see-through.
This case is nuts. There is something really nuts going on here, because I have worked more than once in my life for companies that sold cakes with writing on them. Let me tell you something. There is no way, there is no possible way that an employee at a Whole Foods, where the ass is silent, is going to write that on a cake unless specifically instructed to do so by a customer. Even if a customer specifically requests that, that employee is going to go get a manager and say, this guy wants me to put the word fag on a cake. Are we okay with that?
I don't feel comfortable doing it.
Mm-hmm. Because that's how seriously this is taken.
Because I don't know any people that use that so openly.
Yeah.
But some people use, you know, one of your girlfriends will say, oh, hey, slut.
Yeah.
As a terms of endearment. We don't actually mean it.
There are segments of the gay community that use the word the same way that certain segments of the black community use
the
N-word.
Yes.
You know, it's a term of affection and endearment. We're taking it back. No one is writing that on a cake unless they are told to. There would be an order slip that would say, this is what I want written on the cake. So we know that didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
So now we are left with two possibilities. Either some employee, completely of her own volition, decides to add that word to the cake, and the customer doesn't notice until he gets home, even though the cake is in a box with a translucent top. And when you look at the picture online,
you can see the
box is closed, and
you
can very clearly see the word.
And have you ever gone to a bakery to pick up a cake, even if you're going to, you know, Stop and Shop or Demoulas? Do you always look at the cake? You want to make sure it says the right thing. You want to make sure it's the right colors that you picked out. Always. I've never not looked at the cake.
I assume the argument that he's making is that the UPC sticker was placed over that word on top of the box. So he looks in, all he sees is "Love Wins." Then he gets home and opens the box.
The UPC code is maybe at most a half an inch by 2 inches. The word was at least 2x2.
It might have been. Some places have big UPC codes. Let's make the allowance that it was hidden under the UPC code.
So now there's also this argument of the placement of, because if you look at the top, think about a clock, it's about 10 to 2 where Love Wins is written.
Yeah.
Kind of in a, you know, arc. And his argument was, well, what were they going to put there? They put that word. It's so strange. This story is so strange.
I am not buying this guy's story for
a second.
There are so many legitimate reasons to sue Whole Foods. I don't know why you'd have to go out and make one up.
Asparagus water. We talked about that on the show.
Yeah.
If you listened, you would know.
Yeah. Sue them over the weights of their foods and get a state investigator to come in because you may find out that they're mismarking the weights on the foods. That's what happened in New York last year.
Mm-hmm.
Just in a routine inspection, they're like, the weights on all this stuff is wrong. You're overcharging customers.
And if you're going to accuse somebody of writing that, maybe you should see if they're gay as well, because they're very unlikely to write that.
So. Yeah. Just knowing what I know about that industry, there is no way that walks out the door of a Whole Foods written on a cake. Because the employer writing that knows they're going to get fired. So you have to really hate this guy to do that. And I don't think that's the case. Because what did Whole Foods say when he called them? We're going to go fire the person that did that.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go and talk to the person and they're like, yeah, that didn't happen, sir. So I don't know what's going on here, but keep an eye on this one because this one is almost, that's the thing that happened,
right.
Worthy. That's how goofy this is. In technology news, Google is once again in the crosshairs of European regulators. The European Union claimed that Google violated competition laws by giving its own Android operating system preferential treatment on mobile applications. Earlier this week, the EU also accused Google of competitive violations for contracts that require smartphone makers to install a suite of Google applications if they want to include the Google App Store on their devices.
Oh, absolutely. This story was first coming about, I told you on my old Android, you would pull it up or just get it new. And there were at least 6 different apps that were Google related.
Yeah.
So it's Google Play Store, Google Music, Google TV. And it gives you all these options. And you're like, I guess I'll use these.
But
I can understand where the EU is coming out and saying you're trying to create a monopoly of the phone system.
Yeah.
You can't automatically put your product in there if it wasn't wanted.
Well, years ago, the European Union made it clear to Microsoft that you could not bundle your browser in with the operating system,
mm-hmm.
which is why Internet Explorer was broken off and actually had to become a worthwhile product on its own for anyone to consider using it. So Google could not bundle anything into Android, but it could turn around and say, well, if you're on Android, you want the Google Play Store because that's what everybody wants to get their Android apps.
Well, that's the only way that you get your apps through it.
So they wrote their contract to say, if you want the Google Play Store, you have to make Google Search default, you need to use, and you need Gmail, mm-hmm. and you need this Google product, and you need that Google product. And the European Union is looking at that and they're like,
well,
you violated not just the spirit, but the letter of the law.
No, and that's what happens when you purchase an Android. That is how, that's like your quote unquote cloud.
Yeah.
If you're thinking in reference to iPhone, Gmail, all of your accounts are hooked up to that. And I had a Samsung, so the Samsung worked off of your Gmail account. You couldn't have a Yahoo account that was attached to that. It had to be Gmail. So there you go. There's a perfect example.
Google wants all the monies. That's what it comes down to. And
complete world domination.
Yes. And as long as they are in the dual businesses of operating system and content provider, they're going to keep running up against stuff like this. It would make sense for them if they wanted to stop running afoul of Europe. Because here in the United States, we'll let them do whatever they want. Google makes more money than just about any company in this country. If you're Google, if you're Apple, if you're Microsoft, you can buy senators all day long. You can buy enough senators to quiet down the Federal Trade Commission. Do whatever the heck you want. Europe doesn't care. Because Europe looks at this and Europe says, we should have European companies that are big players on the internet. And we don't because we have all of these American companies that are breaking the law to try and keep our companies off the internet. And they've had it. And this is a quiet trade war that's been taking place between the European Union and the United States for the past decade.
Mm-hmm.
And it will continue to take place.
And they put their foot down and said that this isn't happening.
Yeah.
And whereas here in the United States, we don't care.
And Google is not going to win this one. It's pretty cut and dry. They have the contracts. They can clearly illustrate how the contracts were non-competitive. And Google is going to have to change their practices once again.
No why. There's no sun up in the sky. Stormy weather.
Your 5-day forecast for the Boston area. Temperatures are going back down into the 30s tonight. Kids, bundle up if you're going out, but it will be clear. Humid, but clear. Tomorrow, we start off cold, and then here comes the sun. Beautiful sunny day. Highs in the lower 70s. By the end of the day tomorrow. Temperatures tomorrow night.
I love that word, 70s.
Temperatures tomorrow night fall back into just the lower 50s. Skip work on Friday. Call in sick. If you're a teacher or a kid on vacation, Friday is your winter day. High around 75 degrees. Few clouds in the sky, but beautiful. At least in the Boston. If you get down on the Cape, it's going to be in the 60s. Temperatures Friday night fall back into the mid-50s. And then Saturday, we're going to struggle to get up to 60 after morning showers. Temperatures Saturday night in the lower 40s. Sunday, we hit the mid-50s and temperatures in the mid-40s before we continue down that path on Monday. So you got one really nice, warm winter on Friday. All day.
Tomorrow's supposed to be pretty warm, though.
You're going to have a nice, warm winter tomorrow, but then we get back into 60. Not bad.
I'll totally take it.
Not terrible, but we got a couple of 70-degree days. So if you're looking to, you know, take a drive down the beach, maybe get some ice cream, maybe go check out the hot dog stand, you got good days to do it. 617-627-3800 is the telephone number. You can also find us on the Facebooks. We're on the Facebooks. Facebook.com/BigPictureWMFO. We got someone back. We actually dropped. Like, can we please? Facebook.com/BigPictureWMFO. We've been stuck at this number of people who are following us, and we want to get higher. I know you listen to the show. I know you enjoy the show. You get more of the show all week long, and we don't annoy you. Lisa posted something nice about beer yesterday.
Really, really good beer.
And the Saudi Arabia.
New favorite.
The Saudi Arabia story got a tremendous amount of traction without any help from either one of us. So that was a big one. So, you know, if you follow us on Facebook, you're going to get one story a day from the news that is, in my opinion, the single most important story of the day. Occasionally, I will throw something goofy and fun in there if it's a slow news day and there's something great that's goofy and fun. But for the most part, this is real heavy-duty, hardcore stuff you need to know that is going to be making headlines for in the coming days and weeks. So if you follow us, it's like getting a window into the future. You know about the big news before it happens.
You're good at that. Crystal ball.
I'm okay at that. when we come back, did you hear where we will break down a lot of other things that have happened in the news right here on WMFO Medford.
Sarah Beck, Consumer Meat Specialist with the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Many people ask me, is a prime rib roast prime quality? Not necessarily. Prime rib is just another name for a beef rib roast. You'll often see it written this way on restaurant menus. Prime rib is not a reference to the grade or quality of the meat. This is a little confusing since the top grade for beef is USDA prime. So you could have a USDA prime rib, or you could have a USDA choice prime rib. So remember, if you're looking for the top grade of beef, look for the letters USDA along with the word prime. Or if you want the next quality grade, look for USDA choice. It's almost as high in quality and is the grade sold in most stores. For more free information on buying meat, write How to Buy Meat, Agriculture Radio, Washington, D.C., 20250.
Okay, gang, so chances are there'll never be an emergency ever, ever again.
Mm-hmm.
But just in case, let's talk about a plan.
Okay.
So who's going to do what? Anyone? Yeah, okay, perfect. We'll figure it out as we go. So, who is going to grab the go bag?
What's a go bag?
It is a bag we do not have that is filled with things we really, really need in an emergency.
Guess we won't have to worry about it then.
Ah, good point. So, we all know who to call if something happens then, right?
I'd have to call Jill, Devin, Melissa, Karen, and Bruce.
And I will try to call all of you, but Greg doesn't have a cell phone. Dad's phone will have a dead battery.
No doubt.
And Julie will be on the phone with Jill, Devin, Melissa, Karen, and Bruce.
Well, this is great. I am so glad that we don't have a plan.
I know.
Winging It is not an emergency plan. Make sure your kids know what to do during an emergency, who to call, where to meet, what to pack. Visit ready.gov/kids for tips and information. A public service announcement brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
The Big Picture on WMFO 91.5 Medford. I'm Lisa Nichols with Derek Gary. As always, we are here with you on Wednesday nights, and we want you to be a part of the show, and you can do that by giving us a call, 617-627-3800.
I just gotta play soul music.
Yeah.
From now on. That's all I'm going to do. I'm going to play soul.
Well, that's music always means it's time for Did You Hear? The segment of our show when we bring to each other one word or a couple word answers, maybe a name, and we have to guess what the story is from the last few days. And we always bring you stories that are the most important, or, you know, sometimes we throw some fun things in there. But we just try to, you know, embarrass each other and see how much each of us doesn't know or does know. All right.
I know everything.
Last week we were, you know what the thing is, Derek? Some weeks we do phenomenally.
Yes.
And it's typically slower news weeks because there's nothing for us to look at.
We're reading everything.
And we're
Whereas
important weeks.
This is one of those weeks, by the way. Not because it's been a slow news week, but because the entire world media is focused on the New York primary, whose outcome was known a month ago. So today,
if you were actually shocked with what happened yesterday,
all day yesterday we're inundated with it's primary day, it's primary day, it's primary day, and then today it's primary results, primary. It's like we knew what was going to happen. This is worth one story, and then tell us what else is going on.
So if you didn't get, you know, deep into the news, this is why we're here. I'm going to start.
You can do that.
CVS.
Oh, CVS.
Like the pharmacy.
The pharmacy store. CVS. No idea. I didn't see anything on them this week.
This was on CNN Money. CVS basically doesn't want you to come into their store anymore.
Oh,
they
good.
Are launching curbside pickup service with its own app. They're now going to offer CVS Express. It's a service that allows customers to order non-prescription products via the app. Customers can pick them up. It's basically just like you have call-ahead service at a restaurant. You pull up into a designated spot. Somebody delivers it to you. You have the option of also going in and having all your products ready for you. But it's like you're just shopping on your phone.
Why would anyone go into a CVS if they didn't have to?
I don't know.
CVS has... It's like they're stuck in a time warp.
Yeah, I try to use the drive-through pharmacy as possible.
The interior of a CVS in 2016 is unchanged from the interior of a CVS in 1976.
But the positives, Derek, of going inside is you get a 4-foot-long receipt that maybe has a couple CVS bucks in there.
I want to go off on the receipts some night. We need to talk about what is happening with the receipts, because the receipts are a big problem.
No, absolutely.
And I got a ridiculous one. That I was just sitting there looking at it and saying to myself, I can't believe you killed a tree.
Did you get a coupon for a feminine product?
No, it was...
Because it typically goes by everything that you buy. So I get a lot of makeup coupons. household products, Windex, bleach.
It was.
What did you get?
It was Taco Bell.
Oh, okay.
And there was this giant ASCII art of a chalupa chewing up 3 inches of receipt.